bringing you the latest in tax credit news, insight, and analysis. This is Tax Credit Tuesday with your host, Michael Novogradic.
Hello, I'm Michael Novogradic, and this is Tax Credit Tuesday. This is the April 16th, 2024 podcast. 2 weeks ago, on April 1st, HUD released income limits for 2024. These are the limits that determine renter eligibility for HUD-assisted programs, as well as low-income housing tax credit finance properties. These income limits also are used to determine the maximum rents owners of tax credit finance properties can charge tenants. As our viewers on YouTube can see, I'm pleased to have Thomas Stagg as my guest today. Thomas is a partner in our Seattle Metro office, and as longtime listeners of this podcast know, there's probably no one outside of HUD who knows more than Thomas about rent and income limits for tax credit finance properties. I'm really happy to have him back on the podcast. Now let's turn back to the big news. The 2024 income limits that were released increased on average about 6% over the 2023 income limits. Now I do emphasize on average because income limits for many areas were higher than 6% and for many areas they were lower. Now, tenants and owners of tax credit properties are most interested in the change in income limits for their individual area. And to that end, in terms of how HUD was going to make the calculations, earlier this year, in January, they did say that for purposes of the 2024 income limit calculations, they would use the same methodology as they used in 2023. Purposes of determining the maximum percentage increase in area. They did, though, add in one notable addition. In addition to saying they would do the calculations the same as in 2023, they said there would be an overall 10% ceiling on increases in area incomes. And this announcement of the 10% overall ceiling did get a lot of press attention. Now, under the methodology used in 2023, if that had been used solely that was in 2024, then the maximum increase in any area would have been 14.8%. But since HUD also has this overriding 10% cap, the maximum increase was 10% for any area for 2024. Now, I do say the maximum increase is no more than 10% in 2024 for any area, but I do note that income limits are complex in many ways, and there is a category of properties that are not subject to this overarching 10% limit. And these properties are colloquially referred to as Harris special properties. And just to keep you wondering, if you don't know what they are, we will discuss them later in the podcast. But I want to go back to the overarching 10% increase in the impact that it had, or at least had in part. And that is with this 10% increase, Thomas was able to calculate that roughly 20% of areas in the United States were limited by the cap, which means, but for the cap, the income limits would have been higher. Now, we'll also note that last year, the cap was about 6%. And not surprisingly, a much greater number of areas were limited by the cap. Last year, roughly 85% of areas were limited by that nearly 6% cap. My guest, Thomas, has been on this podcast several times to discuss the income limits. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm really happy to have him back. There's no one else I'd want to have on this podcast from Novogradic to discuss income limits. I know your listeners appreciate having him on as well. Now, in today's episode, Thomas and I will first talk about the main takeaways from last week's announcement, or the announcement 2 weeks ago, and what the cap and 10% ceiling means to tenants and property owners. After that, we'll discuss some exceptions to the general trends with income limits. And then we'll also look at what's coming and some important upcoming dates for determining next year's income limits. This is obviously a critical topic. It affects every tax credit property in the United States and its possessions. So if you're ready, let's get started. Thomas, welcome back to Tax Credit Tuesday.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be back.
Now, before we dive into income limits, please remind our listeners about some of the services you provide to clients at Novogradic.
Yeah, so in addition to providing income limit knowledge and expertise, and also providing our income limit estimator that estimates future income limits. I also provide audit and tax services to mainly to developers who are building affordable housing. And in addition, I also help developers who are applying for tax credits, navigate state agency requirements, and submit complete and accurate applications. So as you can imagine, this is a busy time of year. We're coming off our main audit and tax season and rolling right into application season. So it's an exciting time.
And I do appreciate you joining me. We're recording this on April 15th, which I don't think Thomas was expecting to be recording a podcast on April 15th. So thanks for making time for the podcast. I do want our listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good thing I didn't qualify for the Boston Marathon this year.
That's a good point. As we discussed before, this is your 13th appearance on the podcast, which does tie you with our partner, Tony DePony, for the second most appearances. You've reached your Baker's Dozen of podcast appearances. And in case our audience is wondering who has the most, that would be Peter Lawrence. He's been a guest 15 times. So you and Tony are just a bit behind.
Well, I think it's more impressive. I've been on here more times than there are Fast and Furious movies. I feel like there's a lot of Fast and Furious movies. So if somebody wants to marathon my podcast, like they do Fast and Furious movies, I'd recommend that.
So let's jump into our discussion. I gave a brief overview on the recent income limits release, but I wanted you to share with our audience some of the key takeaways that you observed after seeing this year's income limits.
Yeah, and you touched on something. I think the good news is income limits are going up, which is good because wages are generally increasing as well. And so if income limits aren't increasing at the same rate, then it's harder for people to qualify for affordable housing. So we want this kind of steady increase in income limits. And this year at just under 6%, that's a nice steady increase. It's also good for owners and developers as a steady increase in rents help keep up with inflation, help keep projects operating, and help keep upkeep on maintenance and those sort of things. So all in all, it's kind of a good year with income limits increasing. Now, again, we had the cap, impact of the cap this year, as we mentioned, 21% of all areas. But to put that in perspective, I think it's more important to look and say that's 31% of the population. So about a third of the country lives in an area that has a cap. But this year, it's interesting, if we strip away the cap, instead of having a 6% increase, the increase would have been 7.52%. So it's not as big of a spread as in past years. And we'll talk a little bit as to why it's not as big of a spread as we've seen in past years. But the cap really isn't as kind of impactful this year across the board as it was in past years. Last year, 85% of the areas were capped. So you can imagine the difference between the capped and uncapped limit was a lot larger. But we kind of look across the country, we see that there was a little bit of a divide between our metro and non-metro areas. Metro areas were increasing a little bit faster at 6.1%, whereas our non-metro was increasing at 5.7%. So a little bit slower, but what's interesting is the metro were more volatile. 8% of all metro areas had a decrease, whereas only 5% of the non-metro areas had a decrease. So I thought it was interesting when we looked at kind of that spread there. And then one real interesting area, well, at least to 3.6 million people, is Minneapolis-St. Paul. It was actually flat this year. And so it's not often we see an area that large be flat. And so if you look at our maps that we're going to show in the webinar coming up, and we can probably link to them in your show page as well, you see this big gray area right there that covers this huge area that's in Minnesota and Wisconsin that's flat year over year. We look at the states with the biggest movers. Massachusetts had the biggest increase, an average increase of 9.5%. So you're looking at, they're increasing across the state right at the cap. Then Rhode Island, Arizona, New Mexico, Idaho, and Washington round out all the states at an increase of greater than 8%. And you look at those states, they're kind of spread across the country. You got Washington over on one side, Massachusetts on the other, Arizona, New Mexico in the south, or southwest, I should say. And so you kind of see the country all in all was increasing. It was kind of spread across the entire country.
Now, thanks for that survey. That's really helpful in terms of the broader overview of the income limits. I don't want to spend too much time on this overarching 10% cap on income increases, but that did get a lot of fanfare and it probably gets undue attention given the impact that it has. Maybe you could talk a bit more about those areas that did end up being limited by the 10% would have otherwise been 14.8%.
Yeah. And so before we dig into the areas, I want to remind people HUD has always had a cap, right? We've had a cap for the last 10 years. It's just now this year they had a ceiling of 10%. And that caught news partially because that was spawned by some of the news, some of the people were covering it. But if we look back historically, there's only been 3 years. I forget which side my camera's facing. 3 years, so we've had an increase over 10%. And that's 2018, 2019, and 2022 that the cap has been higher than 10%. And you can count 2024 as well. So 4 years over the last 14 years has it been over 10%. So it's not going to be this huge impactful thing I think was made up to be. As I mentioned earlier, it also wasn't as impactful because we look at the change between the capped areas at 5.9% average increase and without the cap, 7.5. So not a huge difference there. But what I think is really interesting is to look and say, okay, 20% of the areas were capped, which is right around 1,100 areas. But how many areas fell between this new 10% ceiling and the old 14.8% ceiling? And that was 617 areas. So of the 1,000, 400 would have been capped at 14.8 regardless. And then we have the 600 that fell between 10 and 14 that would have been, it was slightly higher than 10, but still less than 14. So if you really kind of look at, to me, those are the ones, 1,000 areas were impacted, right? Because they are lower than they would have been. But of those, 600 would have been in this small window. The rest would have been capped regardless of what that cap was. And we're just be talking about the magnitude of the cap. What I think is though is interesting, right, is if the cap had been 14.8%, then the percentage of areas that were capped would have been, you know, right around that 10%, which is in line with what it used to be. So it seems as though the 14.8% cap is really kind of getting back to where we used to be, where we're just catching the outliers. And this 10% ceiling is serving the purpose of saying, hey, we want to catch the outliers, but we also want to manage the amount of increases that are happening at the property level. So it seems as though it's kind of a good balance. I can't be too upset about it. 20% of the areas is more than we'd like, but it's not, I think, overly impactful this year.
That's a good point. And I would also just note for listeners that one of the overarching reasons to have an income limit at all cap is just some concern about on a year-over-year basis, as you go through the estimation process, you know, could the data overshoot, sort of be too high? So the notion is to come up with some overall standards to limit those increases in a given year so you don't run the risk of overshooting such an area and have no income growth for a number of years based upon the manner in which the estimates are done. So that is something for listeners to keep in mind. So it does, it does serve a purpose beyond simply in the short term impacting rent and qualifying income levels.
Yeah. And Mike, I think there's an interesting follow-up to that. So our income limits working group was had its meeting on Friday and HUD joined us and they kind of talked about this. Somebody asked HUD, they said, you know, is this 10% ceiling here to stay or is it going to change? Will it be a 5% ceiling some year or something different? And I think HUD is being very pragmatic about it. First, they said, you know, the 10% ceiling is here to stay for the foreseeable future. But if something were to change, if we suddenly had rapid inflation, obviously 10% ceiling wouldn't make sense in that environment anymore. And what they're doing is they're looking at two things. They're looking and saying, how much of the areas are capped year over year? So they're looking to say, are we really burdening specific areas with this cap? And do we need to revisit that? And they're also looking and saying, what percentage of the population lives in a capped area? Are we impacting population so that people aren't qualifying? So I think HUD is being very pragmatic about this and looking into it and being very transparent. And so that's been a real advantage of the members of the Income Limits Working Group is kind of being able to hear straight from HUD what they're thinking about this and how that's working.
No, thank you for sharing that. That's really helpful. It provides added insight into the durability of this 10% cap. It certainly makes sense, everything that you said. I will also note that as we also discussed and the income limits working group discussed it as well, there was also a notion of, well, maybe there was a middle ground in the cap and not apply the cap on incomes to properties that are in the development phase. Because the one thing about the cap is in these 20% of areas, if you have a property under development and projecting out, you won't have quite the income level you might otherwise have, which means not much further financing. So, you know, a handful more properties will be financially feasible for a while, but that obviously has a little complication to it. So I don't want to go there. I wouldn't even have you comment on that, but I'll just put that out there.
Well, that's a great plug for podcast number 12 that we did together, where we talked about the cap. And if people really want to dig into that, we have a great discussion on the impacts of it.
Good point. Good callback. So maybe we should talk a bit about the other end of the spectrum. I noted in the introduction that there was an average 6% increase, which does mean that many areas had increases of less than 6% or even decreases. I thought it might be interesting, or would be interesting, for you to share some interesting patterns or observations you had about those areas with lower income growth and or a decrease in measured income.
Yeah. So when we look at it, about 6% of areas had a decrease. So not a ton of areas. And it's interesting, preparing for this, I kind of looked back at previous years. And when we first started really tracking income limits and did our first webinar, it was back around 2010, 2011. And in those years, we were seeing, you know, 20, 30% of areas having decreases. So all in all, it's been a very good last few years for developers, because we've had these steady increases. But this year, we do have more decreases than we've had in past, in the recent history. So 6% are decreased, but we do see a little more pocketed. And we see some states that were really hard hit. Nebraska, 52% of the areas had a decrease. Wyoming, 47% of the areas had a decrease. What's interesting is, even with, you know, 52% of the areas having a decrease, the average change in Nebraska was still a positive 2.25%. An average change in Wyoming was still a positive 1.7%, but wasn't only rural areas that were impacted. Connecticut had 43% of its areas with a decrease, and an average across the state of an increase of just under 2.25%. So we still see that these areas have decreases across the country, kind of in pockets. A lot of this, if you dig into it, some of it's being driven, about half of it's being driven by the state non-metro adjustment that HUD applies when calculating the VLI. And in few states, the state non-metro decreased. So all the areas that were adjusted by that were kind of more likely to have a decrease due to that. And as we talked about earlier, you know, if we look at the spread, 8% of the metro areas had a decrease, 5% of the non-metros had a decrease. So it is hitting kind of all over the country.
So I'm sure there are some listeners that are hearing you say 6% of areas had a decrease in income limits. And some listeners might be thinking, oh my goodness, does that mean my property rents have to be reduced? So if you could explain why this is generally not the case, that would be super helpful.
Yeah. And so ever since 2009 or 2008, as part of the Housing Economic Recovery Act, HERA, we now have this codified hold harmless. It says once your project's in service, your project-specific income limits and rent limits can never decrease. So if HUD publishes an income limit that's lower for your area, you're held harmless at the previous year's amount. So if last year you were $50,000 was your income limit and this year HUD published $49,000, you continue to qualify tenants at $50,000 and continue to charge a rent calculated off of $50,000. So realistically, your project is not harmed. It's held harmless on your income and rent limits. But of course, unfortunately, there's no provision that says if your rents don't go up, expenses cannot increase for your project. And so even though they maybe are held harmless, they're still going to feel a little bit of a squeeze because costs are increasing. But you'll never decrease once you're in service. But where this has a much bigger impact are for projects that are newly coming online. So if you come online after the effective date of the income limits, you're not in service, so you're not held harmless at these previous income limits. So you'd have to use the then effective income limits. And for rent limits, you'd have to use either those limits or whatever your gross rent floor election was. And we won't delve into that, but there is a little bit of a look back there. But what we will talk a little bit more about is why I said effective date. I didn't say April 1st. And that's because we have this 45-day window after HUD releases the income limits before they're effective. Well, not before they're effective, before you have to rely on them.
Right.
So the IRS has stated in, and this isn't a newsletter, so it's somewhat informal guidance, but it ties back to the formal guidance we have in this 45-day rule. And they've said if you place in service in this 45-day window, you can consider yourself in service in whichever year is most beneficial for you. So if you place in service today, today for podcast purposes, April 16th, you could choose to either use the 2023 limits if they are higher or the 2024 limits if they are higher. So again, look at my example. If the 2024 limits are 49,000 and the 2023 limits are 50,000, you're going to say, yeah, I was in service in 2023 because I was in this 45-day window. So what do we do then? So if you're a developer who has a project that's coming online soon in an area that had a decrease, you really want to work to try and get one unit in your project in service, because then that can lock your entire project into the 2023 limits. And so that date is May 16th. You really want to have at least one unit in service in your project prior to May 16th so you can rely on these old limits. That doesn't give you much time, but it does give you a little bit of time to try and do something. It's of no help if you're placed in service in August, but it is something.
And of no help if you listen to the podcast on May 16th.
Yes, that too.
Another reason to listen to the podcast right when it comes out. I did want to just mention a nuance. When we talk about, you know, your rent, you know, can't go down on a property. I'm sure there's some listener out there who works in property management or something else. They're thinking or screaming into their phone or whatever, however they're listening to it. We mean the gross rent won't decrease because, of course, utility allowances do rise over time. So your actual net rent, net of utility allowances, still can be declining, but you won't have a decrease in your gross rent. So in the introduction, Thomas, I mentioned Harris Special Properties and how Harris Special Properties aren't subject to this overarching 10% income limit cap. And maybe you could explain, so if you will, please explain what HERA special income limits are, just generally, and then which properties qualify to use.
Yeah, so HERA special is a special calculation of income limits that's based solely on the change in AMI, and it benchmarks back to 2008 when HERA came out, and that's why it's called HERA special, the Housing Economic Recovery Act. And so it's only available to projects that are in service prior to 1/1/09. So if you have a new project coming online, you cannot use HERA special for that project. But if you have a project that was in service prior to 1/1/09, you can use HERA special. Now, thankfully, HUD calculates and publishes this for us. So if you're in service prior to 1/1/09 and HUD publishes a HERA special limit, that's the highest limit for that area. And so you'll want to use HERA special for your project. And what's interesting is HERA special also, because of this special calculation, it does not have this ceiling or cap that HUD applies to other income limits. So you can have a HERA special income limit that goes up by 40%, like we saw in Santa Cruz this year. Now, of course, you're not going to raise the rent 40%, but it does help with qualifying tenants. It does help with, again, you'll be held harmless at this higher limit. And so it helps you have this real confidence that you can smooth in increases over a number of years that makes sense for your tenant population and to meet those demands. And so HERA special is not subject to this cap. But what's interesting is this year, HERA special, as I mentioned, HERA special is based on area median income. And we didn't really talk about this yet, but area median income only grew on average by 2% this year. So we see this spread between non-HERA limits and HERA special limits being much tighter. And the average increase for projects that had a HERA special in both 23 and 24 is only 4.27%. And so it's kind of growing much slower than we've seen in previous years. And that's because AMI generally has slowed down a little bit.
Thank you for that explanation. I just don't think I'll add is for the listeners that are wondering how HERA special income limits ever came to be. There is a story here to suggest that we do, you know, respect the fact that HUD is deliberate in their calculations of income limits and trying to be careful not to overshoot, because there was a re-benchmarking that occurred many years ago before the HERA special income limits came in. And this re-benchmarking of the area median incomes led to some areas saying no growth, and they would not see any growth for a number of years based upon this re-benchmarking. And that led you know, many properties to look at their operations and say expenses are going up, income that's working to rise at a pace to keep up with the expense increases. So this HERA special income limit rule came into effect to basically grandfather in older properties so they could see, you know, income limit increases and as a consequence, rent increases to cover higher operating expenses, while the HUD calculated income limits outside of the HERA special rules were taking time to rise up to the HERA special income limits. As Thomas noted, obviously we're, you know, 15 plus years later, you know, there are areas that aren't catching up. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Thomas, if I did confuse listeners too much.
I think it was great.
I think it's good to know, just so when you think about the HUD income limit calculations, that you bear in mind that we want to be sensitive to not overshooting the income estimates, because we are always estimating incomes based upon data that's, you know, 2 years or 3 years older, depending upon which year we're doing the calculations. So we've talked a fair amount about the 2024 rent income limit releases, and now I'd like to look ahead a bit. Now, HUD's announcement, as we talked about in detail in January, they announced how the income limit calculations would be handled. And we noted that in addition, doing it the same way as 2023, they created this overall 10% cap. Based upon HUD providing that guidance, you were able to update the income limit estimator based upon knowledge as to how the calculation would be done. And as a consequence, for county-based income limits and MSAs, your income limit estimates were essentially 100% accurate. Now we're looking to 2025. And, you know, what are our income limits looking like in April 1 of 2025? I thought it'd be useful if you shared with the audience what are some of the areas of uncertainty that we should be thinking about as we think about, you know, income growth over the next year or two.
Yeah, so I think that definitely 2025 is going to be a year of more uncertainty, right? 2023, as we mentioned, 85% of areas were capped. So we kind of knew we had this kind of pent up increase that we were able to rely on for 2024. Only 20% of areas are capped. And so for those other 80%, we're really going to be looking only at the year over year change. And there's nothing to kind of come in and push those up. And so income limits, when we talk about area median income, there's two components. There's American Community Survey data and a CPI component where we trend that forward. And if you think about it, this trend factor, if CPI is kind of staying flat year over year, then your change in income limits are really going to equal exactly what the change in the American Community Survey was. If inflation is growing faster, it's gone up over this two-year period, then your income limits are going to grow faster than the ACS data. Now, unfortunately, we're in the environment right now where CPI is slowing down. And so that means that our trend factor is going to be lower than it was in the prior year. And so we're going to grow slower than what the American Community Survey data is showing. And right now, the trend factor used last year was 1.6. Our estimate of the trend factor for next year is about 1.45 or 1.5. I'm sorry, last year. Yeah, so 1.6 versus 1.45. So we're growing already about 1.5% slower than we did last year. And so we already know we have this about 1.5% headwind. I apologize, it's 1.06 and 1.045. I couldn't figure out why this wasn't making sense in my head as I was saying it. 1.06 or 1.05, or said another way, a 6% trend factor versus a 4.5% trend factor. And so when we look at this slower trend factor, we know that we're going to grow slower on area median income than the ACS data. So now we have to ask ourselves, what's happening with incomes between 2022 and 2023, which is the ACS data we're going to use this year? We use 2022 for this year for 2024. We're going to use 2023 for 2025. So if ACS is, if we also think incomes have grown slower during that period, and we have a slower trend factor, we could be predicting kind of a slowdown in growth for 2025. If we think income limits have grown faster from 03 to 04, I'm sorry, 02 to 03, then we're going to be predicting an increase, but with a headwind of CPI slowing that down a little bit. And so those are the things that we're kind of looking at right now when we're trying to get our initial 2025 estimates in control. And then there's two other things I think we should talk about on this. Number one, I already mentioned, we have a lot less cap. So we kind of have less backstop here to protect us. But also, a big driver of increases this year was fair market rents. So in these high housing cost areas, your limits are driven by fair market rents. But I think if you kind of look across the country in some of these fair market rent areas, from what I hear, and again, I'm not the one who's charging rents or doing those sort of things, but I hear that rents are also slowing down, or rent growth is. And so I think our fair market rent driver is going to be lower for 2025. So unfortunately, I have a little bit of my pessimistic hat on for 2025. And if we're working on projects, I'd say we want to kind of be being very conservative in our estimates and be reaching out to us so we can help you understand what is your kind of area-specific data that we do know right now. What is your area-specific data that we don't know, but what kind of hints do we have that can kind of help you understand more so what's happening for your specific area so that you're not thinking, it's been growing at 6-10% over the last 3 years, and that's what I'm going to estimate again. We need to really look at what the actual underlying data is telling us going forward.
No, thank you for that. I always think of it as you have the community survey data year over year. What's the increase in the survey data year over year? And then how does that compare to the assumed, how that compare to the CPI across those years? And you have those kind of going back and forth. And, in years with low inflation, the year over year ACS growth is more meaningful. When you have high inflation, then the projection based upon the higher inflation rate becomes more meaningful. It's almost like a percentage calculation or weighting of the two. But we've spent so much time talking about the 10% overarching cap. What's your prognostication in terms of whether that 10% overall cap is going to matter in 2025?
Yeah, if we hit the 10% cap for 2025, I'll be very surprised. Yeah, just because of it would require, well, I guess it would require ACS to grow by 5%. I could still see wages growing by 5%, but then our actual data is going to be tampered down by 1.5% there when we look at individual areas. So I'd be very surprised if we get to 10%.
And when we talk about the 10% cap, just to refresh our listeners, I mentioned that if we didn't have the 10% cap, it would have been 14.8%. But what Thomas is saying is that overarching limit of 14.8 is going to be, in all likelihood, be below 10%, such that the 10% cap won't be relevant in terms of kicking in. There'll be another overarching cap that's lower. So to do the projecting of income limits, which many clients use to project rents on property center development and the like, as well as at the acquiring portfolios, and then looking at what rent growth is likely to be on individual properties. I know you have lots of clients that subscribe to this rent income limit estimator service. And as part of that service, they get automatic updates to those estimates as additional data is released. And as data is released, the estimates you can provide for most areas become obviously that much more accurate. And unless there's a surprise when HUD releases the data on April 1st, you could be pretty much dead on in most areas. And what are some of the coming dates that are going to be so important in terms of estimating income limits for the next release?
Yeah, it's really this kind of July to September window when we get a lot of data flowing. So first, the CPI estimate that's used is the Congressional Budget Office estimate of CPI, and they usually publish their second estimate of the year in July or August. So that will give us a better picture of what's happening with CPI, if we think it's going to be a headwind, a tailwind, or just kind of level. And we also will receive fair market rent figures in September, which will allow us to calculate high housing cost areas. But most important is we'll receive the American Community Survey data, the one-year ACS data, which will really allow us to start calculating area-specific income limits that are based on the actual same data HUD's going to use, with just a CPI factor that's going to be updated one more time. So at that point, we start to get really accurate income limits that are only subject to kind of change in the CPI estimate. And so that's when you should really be, you know, looking for those very project specific estimates.
Thank you for that. We'll obviously be keeping an eye on those dates. And something tells me that maybe we'll have you back as a guest, if not sooner, in the fall, as to how things are looking with respect to rent and income limits for next year. But before we move on, is there anything else our listeners should know about the income limits and the work you're doing?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, we have our free calculator up on our website. We turned that around pretty quick this year. The income limits released late Monday night. I thought it was going to be an April Fool's joke, and HUD wasn't going to release the limits for us. Then about, I think, 8 Pacific, they showed up on their website. And so we were able to update the calculator same week. So that's up in beta format for people to go and start running initial income limits on that. And then this coming Thursday, so 2 days from now, we have our webinar, which, you know, this podcast is great because we get to talk about these limits, but the webinar is really good because we have visuals that help really drive home the point we're making. We have maps, so you can see that big gray area around Minneapolis. You can see where the greens are across the country. And we really kind of get into very kind of specific examples. So that'll be Thursday. It's not too late to register. And then kind of more important for ongoing work is this income limits working group. We've had great interaction with HUD, but HUD has also been doing a lot of policy changes lately. They changed how we calculate fair market rents. They changed the ceiling equation. You know, the income limits working group started in kind of the rise of lack of data out of COVID, but we're seeing that there's a lot that we're still doing on income limits, a lot of interfacing with HUD, a lot of interfacing with other agencies. And so the working group is, I think, doing a lot of good work. And so, you know, you joining that helps us continue to interface and underwrite these kind of projects we're taking on. And so then come, and you get to come and hear HUD talk to us directly and other perks, and you get to see me a little more regularly. I'm not sure that's good or bad.
That's a value.
And then finally, we have our conference in, 2 weeks in San Francisco. I'll be there. You can corner me at one of the cocktail hours, and we can talk about income limits, and we have a couple blog posts up as well. And this is a little bit off topic, but we're posting a blog post today on the California cap on rent increases that was passed at their May 2nd meeting. Not May 2nd, April 2nd. So if that's of interest to you, be sure and read that blog post, because there's a lot of really good information in there.
And that's also another example of something that the Income Limits Working Group will has discussions on. You know, California's, you know, creating these state-based income limits. And it has happened in other states, not like it's the first, but it is something for listeners to be mindful of. So I would, you know, encourage everyone to join the Income Limits Working Group. I'd also encourage you to reach out to Thomas if you have any questions. I will include his email in the show notes. I'll also include links to the rent and income limit calculator that Thomas mentioned, as well as a link to the webinar, the conference, the blog post. I'll include a link to joining the Income Limits Working Group. And then, of course, I'll include a link to the rent and income limit estimator. I'd encourage everyone to subscribe to that estimator. So as the data is available for 2025, you'll be the first to know of it and how it's affecting the properties that you have under development and that you own and operate. Now, before we move on to the off-mic section of the podcast, I did want to remind our audience to subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you prefer. And if there's a platform you prefer that we're not on, please let us know that. Send an email to cpas@novoco.com. I also encourage you to share the podcast with your colleagues who may also be interested in some of the many topics that we cover. So now I did want to turn to our off-mic section. And Thomas, you've been asked a baker's dozen, or actually, a baker's dozen of questions over your previous appearances on the podcast, or I guess a dozen. This is your baker's dozen. So I thought I'd give you a different question, or really not even a question. I'd give you an opportunity. If you had anyone you wanted to give a shout out to who's made great contributions to the field of affordable housing.
Yeah. So I think just in line with what we talked about today, I do want to give a shout out to HUD. It's been great working with HUD on these issues over the last couple of years. I feel like they've been very transparent. They released the notice in January outlining how they were going to do the cap, outline the ceiling, giving industry time to discuss it and comment on it and think about it before they became effective. We didn't find out about it when we were reading the HUD income limit briefing notice, right? So, and they've been very willing to join the working group and to listen to our comments and feedback. And in fact, on the working group, they even alluded to a discussion we had on the working group that they were considering. And so it's just been great working with this iteration of HUD. Every iteration with HUD has been great, but this iteration especially has been very transparent and, you know, kind of viewing it as a partnership and helping them understand the issues we're facing and then helping us understand kind of their thought process. So my shout out is to HUD today, especially Adam and Kurt at HUD.
Thank you for that. I'll echo that shout out. And I really appreciate the work that they're doing to create predictability here. Predictability is important, you know, when you're out there developing and operating rental real estate financed by tax credits, being able to predict your income stream is very important. And there have to be changes in the rest along the way, but you know, the more predictable they are and the more advanced information that we have, the better for all parties. So my thanks to HUD as well. Thomas, thank you again for your Baker's Dozen podcast appearance. I look forward to number 14.
All right. Me too, Mike.
I'm Mike Novogradic. Thanks for listening.
This weekly podcast has been brought to you by Novogradic & Company, LLP. Archived podcasts are available online at www.novoco.com/podcast or by subscribing to the Tax Credit Tuesday podcast in iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Radio Public. You can find related links referenced in this podcast on our website at www.novoco.com/podcast. Novogradic & Company, LLP is a national certified public accounting and consulting firm with offices nationwide. Learn more about our professional services at www.novoco.com.